to you from our congregation in the Imperial Gymnasium. I want to also thank the policies of Mr. Dukach for the lovely floral arrangement that is usually presented to us when we're asked to speak here. Would like to give you a few asides before I come to the subject for today. We hope that you will remember the needs of our Karen brethren who are on the Burmese-Thai border. I have on occasion addressed this matter. You see, we're in a world in which not an insignificant number of God's people are in fact refugees for various reasons before they perhaps significant number of people in our congregations in this country where English is not the primary language, and I won't identify that any further, who are people who were in fact not legal residents in this country before they were converted. That happens because of the nature of the crises in neighboring countries. Well, it just also happens that under circumstances, some of our brethren in parts of Asia also thank the policies of Mr. Dukach for the lovely floral arrangement that is usually presented to us when we're asked to speak here. Would like to give you a few asides before I come to the subject for today. We hope that you will remember the needs of our Karen brethren who are on the Burmese-Thai border. I have on occasion addressed this matter. You see, we're in a world in which not an insignificant number of God's people are in fact refugees for various reasons before they perhaps become converted. Sometimes after they become converted, we have no insignificant number of people in our congregations in this country where English is not the primary language, and I won't identify that any further, who are people who were in fact not legal residents in this country before they were converted. That happens because of the nature of the crises in neighboring countries. Well, it just also happens that under circumstances, some of our brethren in parts of Asia who already were brethren had to cross into Thailand if they didn't want to fall into the hands of the military to the west. That's Burma. And in so doing, in a sense, they are guests and under supervision of certain Thais, but it puts them in an awkward position. We are of the general impression at this point that the local administrators are gracious enough to grant at least some of the brethren the opportunity to visit our brethren from various countries who will be keeping the Feast of Tabernacles in Chiang Mai in Thailand. Now, this could present a little problem. In the first place, most of the brethren going to Thailand come from what we call the first world. But these other brethren do not. They not only don't come from the first world, they don't come from the second. They were cast out of the third. And so you can understand some of their potential problems. I trust that everyone who may be leaving from here, so I'm saying this in a sense in advance, will realize that these brethren do know several languages, but they may not understand how we spend money. And you should realize, of course, that when we spend our money, We do it judiciously and wisely, but our income for a year, in many cases in those parts of the world, would be a lifetime income. Or what you would have, you see, as the festival top would represent the income for many years, the full income for many years of some of these people. Now, they don't live in poverty in the sense that fruits fall off the trees, herbs grow out of the ground, and they don't have to pay with hard currency. But nevertheless, it is important that we pray for their general welfare and safety, and that we also realize that we must be discreet and understanding and helpful in how we befriend our brethren who have never been outside before a country that was never recognized as a country, because these people grew up in a republic of Kautilay that you will not find on a map. It represents an area that Burma claims, but has had no full control over since the Burmese state was founded in 1948. It also represents an area not recognized by the United Nations. And these people have had to live by their wits. The last man who was converted among them was warned that if anybody else were ever converted, they would simply have to be shot, because the Republic of Kautilay could not afford this attrition to the Church of God. So today, in a sense, the doors are closed, and our brethren have all had to leave that area and become refugees in a country which does not accept refugees from this area legally. They simply have had to go there, and we can be very grateful that the local governor of Tak province or another province has been gracious enough to accept them. My wife and I are planning to go to Europe. This is an assignment we appreciate. My wife has never been to Czechoslovakia before, although some of her relatives came from the area. I have been there in 1966, which is 21 years ago. That is, I was there longer ago than most freshmen were born. It's hard to realize, of course, how time goes by, and that seems very recent to me. But for some of those who are freshmen or sophomores or perhaps even juniors in college, beginning the junior year, you'll soon be 22, most of you, if you aren't already, it's like an entire lifetime. I would like to explain just a little bit about a country like that. In Czechoslovakia, when you wanted to say things that did not get to Russian ears, you had to be very careful and whisper. And you had to be sure you were out of distance of anybody else, and you had to be sure whosoever ears were hearing you understood what your intent was and understood your attitude. Now, the Hungarians, who are their neighbors, didn't have this problem. I was in both countries in 1966. There, the Hungarians could be no more than 10 feet from the Russians, and they would talk in Hungarian about the Russians, and the Russians couldn't understand them. Now, they talked reasonably respectfully, but they nevertheless talked and felt confident. But the Czechs speak a language so related to the Russian that any Russian hearing Czech spoken would think it's some Russian peasant who is speaking it. That's the way they look upon the language. It's a low, low Slavic language. The Czechs do not see it that way, but you know what I mean. There are certain standards, and the Russians have the standards of literature that simply were not characteristic of the Slavic language that the Czechs came to use. But it put them in a very awkward situation, whereas the Hungarians were far more casual in discussing their relationship relationship with their Soviet brother. And that explains, I think, a significant part of the problem, that wherever Slavic was spoken, people had to be far more discreet. And the Hungarians, of course, spoke a language far more difficult for most people to grasp. Even the Romanians speak at least a Latin language as a whole. And therefore, if a Russian had learned French, it might not be difficult to pick up even some Romanian, because Romanian is a Latin language. Anyway, we will try to convey our best wishes to you, to our brethren who will be meeting in Brno, or Brünn, as they would commonly call it there, behind the Iron Curtain, some possibly from Poland, some from East Germany, I think some from Yugoslavia, and of course brethren from elsewhere in Europe, and those transferring from North America. We will be leaving this evening, but not for the reason that you may imagine. I just thought you should know, you've heard about the problems of young soldiers who die of cancer, leukemia, or things of that nature who were in Vietnam, presumably because of Agent Orange or other chemicals that were used as defoliants. Well, we had a call just, this is Thursday, it was Tuesday night, that my wife's brother's son, who was in the war, they're not members of God's church, had died of cancer that clearly could be linked to his having to lay down airstrips on immediately defoliated areas during the Vietnam War. Or as one soldier who was in the hospital where this young man of 40 went, one soldier immediately asked him the question, "Were you in Vietnam?" And the answer, of course, was yes, yes. He had cancer that appeared first on the foot and then in the lungs. The one cancer was solvable by good, I would say, diet and understanding of those things nutritionally that we might know, but there was no way to resolve the other problem. And I think we have to realize, of course, the government knows it now, but they are not in a position to really say it is scientifically proved, any more than the tobacco industry is willing to say certain things are scientifically proved that the Surgeon General knows to be quite true. It's simply an attitude, but after all, when you are in the military, you are serving the government, and you serve being willing to give up your life, and sometimes you gave it up on the battlefield, and sometimes you simply were chemically poisoned and give it up later. But that's the situation. So we will be going to the funeral tomorrow in the Midwest, and we'll be happy to visit. Interestingly, one of the Meredith family is here. We'll be visiting with the church at Joplin on the Sabbath. And I appreciate that Mr. Salyer suggested that my wife and I be able to be there. For what it's worth to him, if he had sent us between here and Joplin with 30 days advance notice, it would have cost more to send us than it actually is going to cost, because we're only going to fly to Kansas City, which is much cheaper, and we will take the responsibility of the ground route. So in that sense, happily, I'm glad to say that although there were no more than 2 days' notice, that in fact it would be cheaper by us taking the ground route and being responsible for that, cheaper to church administration than if we had actually been assigned all the way to Joplin by air with 30 days advance. Now, if that is ridiculous, of course it is. But this is in fact what happens, that you can't tell what the cost of routes are going to be. To Kansas City, it's inexpensive. To get there, from there to Joplin, is much more expensive. And so happily, since we can't afford the time to get there, we will simply take ground transportation. But I think it is important that you realize that we get letters from time to time, and I read them, and I know of people who work with soldiers who have suffered the consequences of these poisons. And we don't realize or even begin to understand how serious some of these problems are in this country. And of course, wherever such chemicals are used in warfare. I would like to take a moment of time and give a few observations that Mr. Haigbold prompted. Of course, he's gone much further than I have in the areas in which he is professionally gifted and is serving our student body as a whole. I would draw to your attention a few things you might like to take note of. When the original reference to the darkness that occurred, that Mr. Haigbold referred to, when that original word appeared in the Greek as Luke wrote it, he used a word that we would translate as eclipse. Years later, Greek being a living language, and the Bible being meant to be understood and not to be misunderstood in the original language in which it was written, the Greek language was used in such a way that it became a decision of the leaders in the Greek world to substitute the word that is translated darkness rather than eclipse. You see, what had happened is that the original word that came to be associated with a natural eclipse meant a darkening at a time when not everybody understood the phenomenon that occurs in the heavens between the earth, the moon, and the sun. Now, in this connection, once that phenomenon came to be understood, the word eclipse came to be an astronomical term and no longer was appropriate for the word darkness in general, which could occur apart from an eclipse, the technical eclipse. Nevertheless, I would draw to your attention that even though at a later time another word, darkness, was substituted to make clear the original meaning of a word that took on a special meaning later, that when the Greeks finally came to print the Bible, to give us that form of the Greek language in which the Bible originally came to be written and handed down, they did adopt the original word that technically today means eclipse. But I would have you know that in earliest days that had reference not merely to the phenomenon in the heavens that would occur, the eclipse of the sun at mid-month, but to any unusual, in that sense, darkness, whether or not caused by such a relationship as may occur at the full moon. You may ask, of course, why Mr. Haigbold cited the fact that this is the beginning of the year 5748. I think it is important on occasion that we rehearse the fact, since this is the Feast of Trumpets, that is, this is also Rosh Hashanah, or the head of the year. Now, there are two kinds of years. There is the religious or sacred year, which begins in the spring with the first of Nisan, or the month of Aviv. Then there is the month that begins now, the month of Tishri, as we call it. Anciently it had another name. In fact, the Jewish calendar that determines the holy days, the calendar determines the holy days. The numbering of the days, of course, is given to the in the Bible. But which day of the month is actually determined by the calendar, because that is determined by when a new moon occurs. Now, the calendar is calculated today and has been throughout its history from the beginning based on this month being the first month. Even when Nisan is called the first month and this is called the seventh month, the determination of when a year begins is not based on Nisan calculating the new moon of that month, but it's based on calculating the new moon of this month. That has never changed. You see, it really isn't the Jews' calendar. It really isn't the Hebrew calendar. If the Jews descend from Judah, and if Hebrew people descend from Heber, but the calendar goes back so that this is year 5748, we are back there in the days of Adam and Seth and Enoch. So the calendar that we have today is, in a sense, only preserved among Hebrew people, preserved by the Jewish nation. This is very important to realize. They were the recipients. Moses is simply saying in his day at God's direction in Exodus 12 that instead of beginning in the autumn, we will renumber the months now so that the spring month begins the year. And the numbering henceforth will be based on that. Nevertheless, the calculation to determine the calendar today, as every year since Moses, whenever it had to be calculated, was based on determining the new moon of this month or determining the first day of the seventh month, which we would, from Moses' day till now, call Rosh Hashanah, the head of the year. The very name in the Hebrew of this day, of course, shows that there were always two ways of looking at the year. Let me say a little something more. The Jews at a later time, probably in the later first century of the present era, meaning somewhere before 100 AD, had already adopted the general idea that the calendar must have begun in the time of creation week, or they associated creation week described in Genesis 1 and in Genesis 2. General Rana in Nepal is an illustration. King Hussein is certainly a general in his country. That is, people at different levels, we are known. And it isn't because those people are learning all about God's message that we have here in the Bible. But they are learning that we represent something different than the United States represents, however much we love the country and are warning it so it doesn't make the mistakes it is now doing. They also know that we represent a message that in fact is going to be the same message that they will suddenly hear. First with the two witnesses, and then with Jesus Christ himself, that will bring peace. There are people whom we know in various levels in religion, some very intimately in other religions. We are known by some who were Hindu, some who were Islamic, many who were Buddhist. And we're of course known in the Christian world that knowledge doesn't breed the same feeling of generosity in return as our relationship, interestingly, in other areas tends to do. In some cases, there has been a very fine, warm, cordial response even within the Christian world. I do not know the specific details. I'm planning to be back after the Feast of Tabernacles for the very first Sabbath after that, though some of you will not be. It is not quite clear, but I have extended an invitation which has been accepted. The man to whom my wife and I extended the invitation could not come before this time, even though we had planned to be. But those who had sponsored him were not able to make adequate, presumably, financial arrangements. So Mr. Baker had called me and said this gentleman is going to be here and hopefully would be able to arrange his schedule right after I would return from the Feast of Tabernacles, and my wife and I would host him at our home. He is Dr. Pereira, not the only Pereira from Sri Lanka. He's the editor of the Buddhist World and one of the editors of the Buddhist Encyclopedia. I met him in Sri Lanka He was the man who turned to the Bible and defined for me what Jesus' teaching was. He had been looking into the Bible, and he found the teaching clearly enunciated in Matthew chapter 5 that I cited for many of you. He said, "This is the heart and core of Jesus' teaching. Think not that I am come to destroy the law or the prophets. I am not come to destroy, but to fulfill." The Buddhist World is a monthly publication, something like that. They used to sell it. Now it is free. He said, "I want you to know that this is being given free because we have learned from Herbert W. Armstrong and the Ambassador Foundation and the Worldwide Church of God that this is the way to go." He begged pardon recently in a letter to me. He said, "I'm enclosing the latest edition. Third world countries do it this way, you have to understand." He said, "I trust Mr. DeCoste doesn't mind that we've used his picture and his personal from The Plain Truth on world peace." Well, there's nothing Mr. DeCoste can do now. It's in circulation. But of course, when Mr. DeCoste wrote it, he wrote it for circulation. And that's in the Buddhist World. He would like to come here and discuss with us and have us enunciate the fundamental way to peace as we understand it. I do not know what his schedule will be. I think it would be remarkable to have a man of his stature here and to be able to discuss with some of the faculty, and in fact perhaps to discuss with some of you. He speaks very good English. His writing is good. You would not find that people in Sri Lanka of his level are deficient in good use of English because of the impact of Britain for so many decades on the island. In any case, think of the implications of men of various levels like this, and we are influencing, as of 1987, we are influencing many, many individuals, so many that we do not know. I was recently invited by Mr. Joseph DeCoste Jr. And Mr. Lipros, I think Mr. Lipros, in a sense, triggered the idea to a Thai restaurant. The assumption is I like Thai food. And so they hosted my wife and me as a kind of prelude to this day, and I came to this restaurant, and the lady had seen me there before, but she was not sure. And I was introduced as myself, and then she said something. She said, I think this is significant because it shows our impact. She says, "Many people in the Thai community talk about you." That is, I am not the only one. They talk about Mr. Leon Sexton, who fell off the temple roof. That is news anywhere he goes in Thailand in the religious community. He's known because of that. Now, I learned to be known by other means, but nevertheless, we are known. I have happily never had my picture in the Los Angeles Times. I regularly have it in the local publications in the Thai community. And the last one I was showing, I was dancing the typical Thai round dance, and one of the leading ladies of the Southern California community there is pictured as showing me how. it's obvious that I was copying as best I could. The use of the hands, of course, are very critical. Mine do not flex like theirs, but it's truly remarkable what they can do with their hands. And it all has a meaning and a symbolism, but we try to understand those things of the cultures of other nations that would be useful. We don't try to be snobbish or assume that other people, because they are different, must be wrong. Maybe we all have learned some interesting things and can copy from one another. So I'd like to conclude today with having you realize and think about what was said this morning and think about what our job is going to be as this festival symbolizes what is going to take place. I have, in a sense, skipped over much of the terrible crisis that we are warning, but we have the broadcast for that, and we don't tell some of the things that we said this morning or this afternoon on television. So I thought I would spend a little time this afternoon focusing on what our job is going to be, because on this festive day we commemorate not only the trumpets that sound in the day of the Lord that lead up to the coming of Christ, but we discover that Christ is coming at the last trumpet. And there were traditionally seven blasts of the silver trumpet blown on this day, like there were a blast on each of the new moons, 1 through 6, and 7 times on the 7th day, as distinct from the question of the shofar, which was specifically blown on this day. Unfortunately, our English word trumpet doesn't distinguish it. There was a silver trumpet defined in Numbers 10, 1 to 10, blown on numerous occasions, and then there was the blowing of the shofar specifically on this day. Now, this day is also a new moon, and there was an ancient Jewish tradition, not stated in the Bible. You can find it revealed in Hastings' Dictionary of the Bible, the multi-volume set, where, quoting from the Jewish material in the Mishnah and the Talmud, that the trumpets were blown each month regularly assigned in the law, November, but in Numbers, 10, and then on the 7th month it was blown 7 times, but not later in the year, a little unusual. And apparently Paul refers to that, the last trumpet, but because he had not read the book of Revelation, Paul was dead, as far as we know, 28 years before the book of Revelation was made known to the Church of God. So he had never read that in the book of Revelation. But he had had the tradition in the synagogue. And so today, in a sense, tells us about the return of Jesus Christ. And it's important in this connection to realize what our task is going to be. One of the first things, of course, is to give an account of ourselves and to be assigned responsibility. And then to get with it and to prepare the world as the millennium is going to open up by the 15th day of this month, just that quickly. If you think time drags, wait till you become immortal. And you will be having to work day and night and never get tired and never get hungry. And we'll be given the responsibility of gradually bringing the children of Israel back and of assigning people the responsibility of where to begin to meet once every week and to begin to assemble on annual holy days to begin to learn about the plan of God. This year we have the remarkable opportunity to be in Thailand, a country that does not know the Bible in particular, other than a few. And there will be a translation from our media and communications defining the nature of this festival. It'll be slightly altered, of course, to meet the fact that they don't have a Bible to read from normally, but it will explain the purpose of the church in assembly and what we stand for and who these people are that will be coming over there. Our brethren, of course, will always be treated well wherever they go at this age, at this time. That won't be necessarily true later, but right now we have peace and we should be thankful for it. But in Thailand, we have the remarkable opportunity not only of observing the feast, but for the first time meeting our delightful Karen brethren, being hosts not only of the government, but of the royal family, and of those who serve in various travel capacities. And it is my understanding that our brethren who will be in attendance will be given an opportunity to visit the agricultural experimental grounds of His Majesty at Chitwada Palace in Bangkok. That indeed is a very, very gracious gesture and an opportunity that is extraordinary because, in a sense, His Majesty and Her Majesty see you as an extension of what they have known of those who have met them before and an extension of Mr. Takata's leadership today. I hope you will all have a safe trip to the festival sites where you were going and take good care of yourselves and be back here for your responsibilities after this holy day season.